Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and we're doing Indie Movie Day today. My guest is Bradley King, who is the co-writer and director of a new video-on-demand indie sci-fi thriller called Time Lapse. It's won a number of film festival awards, and now everybody can see it. Is it limited release in theaters?
Yes, limited theatrical day and date VOD.
Excellent. And I must say, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I enjoyed this movie. Usually with indie sci-fi features, they're hit or miss. You're not going to really know what you're going to get. But I felt myself being drawn in more and more by this as the stakes kept getting raised and the consequences kept becoming more and more dire.
That is great. That is exactly what we hope will happen when people watch it.
So give us a quick synopsis of the film for anyone who hasn't seen it yet.
Sure. Basically, three roommates discover their old scientist neighbor dead, and in his apartment is a machine that he built that takes pictures of the future. So basically, it spits out a Polaroid every day of tomorrow. The characters decide not to report the body, but instead to hide it and try to use the machine for their benefit. And things don't go as they hope.
Or otherwise known, hilarities ensue.
Yes, non-hilarity ensues.
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, so you're the co-writer of this as well as the director.
Yep, that's right.
Tell me about the creation process, because I thought the storyline, when you're dealing with time travel, you've got this, normally, this little fractured sense of where you are and where you aren't. But in this story, everything's in the same timeline, but everybody's worried about creating another one.
Right, correct. Well, the impetus for writing it initially was very practical. We were, we've written some higher budget projects, but we were trying to write something within our means at the time because we really wanted to make something. And we're both a fan of science fiction, and some great things have happened in indie sci-fi in the last 10 years. I think at the time we were watching, Time Crimes over and over again. We thought it was amazing. And so we were reaching around for something new, to do that hadn't been done. And to my writing partner's credit, B.P. Cooper, he was the one that came up with the initial idea of the machine that takes pictures of the future. I think, and we've said this before, but he had seen the movie Timeline, and I think in that they send the camera in a time machine to take a picture of something. And I think from there, Cooper was sort of riffing, like, well, what if the time machine and the camera were the same device? And once we landed on that, then there's so many stories that could be told, obviously, with that camera. And both for budgetary reasons, but also because we're a big fan of, intimate thrillers, we settled on the story paradigm of a small group of friends, finding something valuable and then having it kind of alter or disrupt their relationships and their lives.
The concept of having this machine be this huge contraption that's bolted to the floor that can't easily be moved or stolen by anybody, and it's permanently affixed to his neighbor's window was, for lack of a better way to explain it, it reminded me of a Twilight Zone episode where everything is kind of claustrophobic. Everything's tight, everything's in this one space, and you're dealing more with the characters dealing with the situation instead of overhyping the situation.
Thank you. That's a great observation. I think, it's always a chicken or egg thing when it comes to these considerations, because I remember as we were trying to come up with the story, I maintained, this thing cannot move. If it can move, then the characters are going to want to take it to Vegas, or they're going to want to, who knows what they're going to do, but the story's going to get really expensive and really complicated fast. So my gut as an indie director was, we need to keep it big, immobile for the sake of, you know, budget and practical things like that. But as you say, you know, I love tight, when they're well done, I love tight, claustrophobic stories. And so whether I was subconsciously thinking about that or also maybe I just capitalized on it, but, you know, it, I think it worked in the sense that, yes, we have this sort of apartment complex, which in itself is a weird little bubble in time. You know, we never really leave that space. But then, in addition, yeah, the camera is sort of trapped with this one sort of view. And, of course, I'm a big fan. You know, I'm a voyeur, and I'm a big fan of Rear Window and Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think certainly we tried to capitalize on those limitations and make them work for us in terms of creating, you know, suspense and drama.
Now, your characters, the three roommates, Finn, Jasper, and Callie. Finn seems to be the only one who's really the, I guess, maintenance supervisor of the apartment complex, and Callie's his girlfriend, and Jasper's just the layabout roommate.
Yes.
The interactions between them and how they react differently to discovering the photographs, I thought was interesting, because it seemed like everyone except Callie was becoming unhinged. And spoiler alert, it turns out not to be the case.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, the obvious reaction to discovering anything related to time travel, I think, for a lot of people is financial. You know, how can we exploit this for money? And other movies, of course, have gone there. Other shows, you know, Back to the Future, you know, Biff decides to use the almanac, the sports almanac, to bet. So it made sense to go there with at least one of the characters, and that being Jasper, obviously. And the cool thing about that, again, chicken or the egg, is that that can lead to all sorts of conflict, you know, when you're talking about money and gambling and, you know, what sort of bad things could happen. I personally probably most relate with Finn because, as an artist, you know, most of the pain in my life has come from not knowing what my next creative endeavor is going to be, or not knowing what's going to show up on the blank page tomorrow. Or, you know, I was even a painter and a graphic designer for a while. So, you know, not knowing what the heck I should be doing, you know, with my creative energy has been a primary obsession for me most of my life. And so I, of course, funneled that into Finn and relate most with his sort of side work, not really so much about the money. It's more about, you know, what is he doing with himself? What is he doing with his life? And can this machine actually assist that? In terms of Callie, she actually has a few scenes that were cut out in the beginning that more sort of dove into her motivations as a human being. But hopefully, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but obviously she's most concerned with her relationship with Finn, mm-hmm. which hasn't necessarily been going the way she would like. And so, yes, you know, that was kind of a third component, you know, hopefully a more emotional component of, you know, how could this machine benefit me emotionally or in my relationship? So, yeah, I don't know. We, you know, there's many other ways that machine could have been used, of course, and all of them probably very interesting. But for us, those three were, I guess, the most interesting. So we ran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the personal motivations, like I said, it drove everybody. Finn wanted to use it to help jumpstart his creativity. From the photographs showing what he had painted that day, he knew what to paint that day. Jasper winning the dog races and other sports. And as we found out later, Callie manipulating events to get the relationship she wanted but didn't have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that twist turns out to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Catastrophic?
More spoilers.
Yeah, there's, well. Yeah, no, yeah. The, like, what I believe the line Jasper has is "Don't fuck with time." Yeah, it doesn't end well. Does not end well. So the part of the eccentric inventor scientist next door was played by John Rhys-Davies, something I didn't realize until I saw his name in the credits. How did you get that?
Well, Mr. Bezzarides had a couple of scenes in the movie, and when it came time to cast him, you know, I got a list of possibilities or ideas from our casting director, Rick Montgomery, and John Rhys Davies is on there, and I'm a huge fan. You know, I grew up watching Raiders of the Lost Ark and, you know, whatever. I just love him. So I immediately wanted to go for him, and he agreed, and so we flew him out, and he, you know, worked a couple of days, and it was honestly probably the happiest shooting days of my, or even possible days of my life, you know, just being able to hang out and direct him and geek out with him about his genre path. And unfortunately, when it came time to edit the movie, we realized that as writers, we had kind of made a mistake, and that the scenes that we shot with him, they weren't integral to the story. And when you're in post-production, you're trying to cut as much as you can and make the story as lean as possible. And that was a really heartbreaking moment when we realized that his scenes, while beautiful, were actually kind of slowing the story down. And also a lot of the information we were getting was information we were picking up elsewhere in the movie. So we ended up cutting them. And I think one of them will be on the Blu-ray DVD as a, you know, a special feature extra scene, but yes, he's still, of course, in the movie in spirit, and his photographs show up a couple of places.
Yes, that's...
So he is sort of there still.
So are how many of the deleted scenes for everybody will end up on the Blu-ray?
Not too many. I mean, you know, looking at the wall of scenes that we cut, and you know, editor Tom Cross, has this great method. He also edited Whiplash. You know, he won the Academy Award this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. But he has this method of working where he will print out a picture, you know, with a little bit of information about each scene and put them up on the wall so we can sort of move them around as we edit and kind of see a visual representation of what's going on, you know, in the computer. And it's really great, really helpful for getting your head kind of back in the game every day. But slowly on one side of the wall, you accumulate these cut scenes. And some of them are, you know, it's not even a scene. It's sort of like a, you know, a brief couple of shots that you were using to transition or something. But we did cut a number of scenes, but and Tom kind of raised this point, you know, that really the movie should be able to stand on its own. And so certainly the cut scenes shouldn't, or the scenes you added, the special features, shouldn't ever feel like something you're trying to use to add to the story or to fix something that you didn't get right in the story. And I certainly agree with that. Also, you know, I've had a few experiences where I watch a movie and I watch the edited, the deleted scenes, and it actually kind of paints the movie again for me when I watch it a second time. I don't know, recently they came, you know, a great example is recently they came out with a series of deleted scenes from the original Star Wars movie, which I had never seen. I think I'd seen one of them, but they were involving Luke giving a lot of exposition back on Tatooine about how the Empire works and all this. And I was dismayed after I had watched them. I mean, that's a movie I had seen. You know, I grew up on it. I've seen it a million times. I know it backwards, forwards. You would think there would be no way to pollute that movie for me. And yet somehow seeing those scenes, which weren't honestly very good, and there was a great reason why they were cut from the movie, I'm scared to go back and watch Star Wars again now because I'm just concerned that it's actually going to warp my enjoyment, you know, of those first 20 minutes. So I'm sensitive to that. I don't want to put deleted scenes out there unless I really think, you know, it's not going to harm people too much, and it'll actually add some sort of value for them just in terms of, you know, curiosity, whatever. So there's a few, but not too many.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm curious what you said about earlier scenes with Callie, sort of hinting at her motivations. I would love to see that.
Those you will not see.
Oh no. Of course not. Will there be commentary by you and your writing partner?
Yeah, B.P. Cooper and I recorded more commentary than anyone will ever want to listen to. We went through it once. We watched the entire thing once and did, you know, sort of a normal commentary. We watched it again and did kind of what we were attempting to do, a sort of nuts and bolts, like film school 101, just purely talking about how we did things on a budget, you know, and how we achieve certain things practically. And then there's also, gosh, we might have even done commentary behind a few deleted scenes. And then we also compiled a little featurette of artwork and storyboards and just some procedural things, you know, how we did our note cards and things, and we did a commentary on that. So
when you were developing this story before actually starting to shoot it, were you approaching it as a thriller with sci-fi elements or a sci-fi time travel feature with suspense and thriller elements?
That is a great question. I would say We're a fan of both of those things.
I think as am I.
Cooper and I both aspire to, I think, eventually do, you know, bigger science fiction projects. We certainly have some scripts laying around the office that are, you know, much bigger budget, involving more traditional, when people think sci-fi, you know, think aliens or robots or spaceships or whatever. Again, chicken or egg, I don't know. When we sat down to do this, we knew it needed to be small, which usually means it's going to probably focus more on the thriller relationship drama type elements. And it falls in the category of living room science fiction, which mm-hmm. that's sort of the deal. You have a science fiction element, but really usually the story is a different kind of story, and the science fiction is sort of just a piece of it or a mechanism. Having said that, I didn't want it to feel like just a thriller with like a sci-fi element tacked on. I think we want to make sure that the science fiction element, the camera that takes pictures of the future, is present, either present in every scene or emotionally present in every scene. And so the characters are constantly thinking about it, having it affect their behavior, and hopefully the audience is, you know, thinking about it and the nature of it, what it would mean.
It acts like it unfolds like one of those noir love triangles, and the time machine is the, from Greek mythology, the golden apple thrown into the room to mess everything up.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great analogy. I'm like, I'm going to steal that and use it in the next interview.
You are very welcome to. It's a favorite phrase of a friend of mine. He says, and in come the golden apples.
Right. Discord. That is perfect. I can't believe I haven't used that because, you know, I studied Greek mythology in school. That's amazing that escaped me. Usually I reference movies like Shallow Grave or Simple Plan, you know, mm-hmm. I guess pop culture stories that people are familiar with in terms of this sort of valuable item arriving and creating discord. But you're right, the Greek mythology has it at it first.
Yeah, Simple Plan I thought was an amazingly taut and small, compact movie as well. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. Such a good call.
So what is up next for you guys in terms of something new to take around to the film festivals?
Well, we have two science fiction scripts, which we're really excited about, which we're hoping to be taking around and pitching soon once we just get done with all this, you know, release craziness over time lapse. I guess we even have a third sort of more indie level one that we could probably do ourselves again. If it came to that. But again, I think, you know, most of our ideas actually are pretty big, and we're really hoping to kind of, you know, take a next step up in terms of scope and scale of the science fiction type story we're able to tell. But also a little sidebar is that, you know, there has been some interest in turning Time Lapse into a television show.
Really?
It's a very episodic, it lends itself to a very episodic format. You get this photo, and it shows you what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, of course, at the end of every show, probably a photo would pop out and give you a cliffhanger for tomorrow, you know, or for the next episode. So we would, I think, like to move on to another project for now, but at the same time, we recognize there's a lot of money and interest in TV right now. It is an idea that lends itself to that format, and if we can come up with a good story or scenario that'll sustain itself, you know, episode after episode, I think we're open to it.
Well, Hulu had a little limited series called The Booth at the End, and there's a movie on Netflix called Parallels that Fox Digital is supposed to be turning into a series on Netflix, but the pilot that's on there as a standalone movie is fascinating. It's about dimensional travel, and the device used to travel is an entire building.
Oh, I think I heard about this. Yeah, right.
Very entertaining. But so if you do get something new going, try to submit it to the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival. That's here in Phoenix. And you guys come out, and I'd love to sit down and chat with you guys some more.
Oh, that would be fantastic. This is a great opportunity.
Well, again, thank you for Time Lapse. It was an unexpected little gem.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so glad you appreciated it.
And people, you can find Time Lapse in theaters and video on demand, and very soon, actually already, DVD and Blu-ray, correct?
Actually, DVD Blu-ray will be June 15th.
June 15th, okay.
May 15th is theatrical and VOD. And they can find, you know, we have a Facebook page. They can also go to our website. That's a good hub. It's timelapse-themovie.com.
Okay, we'll include those links with this. Thank you, Bradley, for joining us for a chat today. And thank you very much for a fun little film.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks again for the opportunity and have a great day.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hi, this is Chuck from Technorama letting you know that nominations are now open for the 2015 Parsec Awards. Do you have a favorite speculative fiction podcast that you feel deserves some recognition? Then go to ParsecAwards.com and click the Nominate a Podcast option from the top menu. This is not a popularity contest, so podcasts with small audiences are just as eligible as those with a larger reach. All the rules are also available on the ParsecAwards.com website. Hurry, because nominations are only open during the month of April and May 2015. That doesn't give you much time. Winners will be announced at the Parsec Awards ceremony held at Dragon Con in Atlanta that first weekend in September. ParsecAwards.com. Show your love. Nominate someone. It takes about 60 seconds and you can do more than one. Come on.
I'd like to thank Bradley for such a cool interview. Yeah, that's the kind of interview I enjoy, one where I could really dig in and talk about the project, talk about what went into getting it written, into getting it made, just finding out all that fun stuff. And while I enjoy it, I hope you enjoy it too. We'll keep getting interviews in here and discussions every now and then. And if there are any indie projects, any indie films, short films, web series that you're enjoying that I haven't mentioned or discovered myself, let me know. Feel free to call in, leave a voicemail message. That number is 602-635-6976. And as always, you can email your pre-recorded messages or just email your questions to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Check us out on Twitter. That's @sliceofscifi and @sliceofscifiTV. Facebook page, Facebook.com/sliceofscifi. We have a new group now, Facebook.com/groups/sliceofscifi. It may take a while to get in there, but don't worry. If you want to join the fun, have at it. We have a Google Plus page, and also for those who are into comics commentary, we have itscomicbookday.com. Go check it out. Thank you once again for all of those who are continuing to donate. Everyone's donations are put to good use in support of maintaining and producing the show and maintaining the websites, the hosting for the websites, all of it. Every penny is welcomed and put to good use. Still haven't worked out all the kinks with the live show, but once that is up, the Patreon page will go up and we'll start having fun with those episodes. And as always, my never-ending gratitude, thanks, appreciation, and heartfelt love. Much love to the boys at Sci-Fried for that awesome, awesome music that graces this show. So, that will put a cork in it for this episode. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.